All right, welcome back to another semi-depressing downer episode.
Oh, come on.
Of the SB Nation Houston podcast. With me, as always, Dylan Gwynn of Sports Talk 790. How you doing, sir?
The voice of reason and optimism. Oh,
yes.
Here
Dylan
in
Gwynn.
The flesh.
I never associated Dylan Gwynn with voice of optimism, but
I am a beaming ray.
But before
of
we get into that, you know,
light.
I've realized we've never really given or done a good job of giving out how people can hear us and read us on a day-to-day basis. Of course, you have a show 11 to noon, Monday through Friday on Sports Talk 790, and then also Mighty After Dark.
Mighty After Dark, Monday and Wednesday nights at 7 o'clock Central Standard Time on Sports Talk 790.
And, of course, the Mighty blog on sports790.com.
The frequently visited, much hit upon, Mighty blog, which is currently in back-to-back back-to-back championship weeks of the blog hit contest.
Yeah, doing very well.
790. So, yes.
In the Twitter handle, at the Mighty Gwynn.
At the Mighty Gwynn, and sports790.com is where you can find the blog, and Sports Talk 790 is where you can find the show 11 to noon Central, and on Monday and Wednesday nights, 7 to 8 Central. You know, we got you covered.
Definitely worth a check out. Myself, you can find me on K2H.com under blogs. It is the Hit and Run Monday through Friday post on there. And the Twitter page is, or the Twitter account is Sacked by BMAC with underscore after Sacked and by. All right, now to the topic at hand. On this show in the past, we've gotten a chance to play several different roles. Today, you get the chance to play the role of a therapist because I have to tell you, I'm a little better now. But yesterday, driving home from my buddy's house after the game was over, I was on the ledge, and let me throw this out to you. You tell me why I'm wrong here. The logical part of my brain, which yesterday definitely was not in control, knows that this team has more talent. The defense is light years better, and once you get into that second half of the schedule, which is easier, and presumably we'll have Andre, the Texans will get some, get more wins and likely make the playoffs. But the part of the brain that was in control yesterday, the rabid fan part.
Yeah. I was going to say, wow, you just kind of did my work for me. That's pretty good.
But the rabid part, it just has, God, I hate to use a Vietnam reference when talking about football, but wow. It's like I'm having flashbacks, you know what I mean?
We've been doing this podcast for like 4 minutes and you already went Vietnam.
I went Vietnam. I know, I apologize. I'm the first one to say not to call sports war. But I just wanted to make the point that I just have flashbacks of the Chargers and the Jets games last year. Flashbacks of Schaub's pick six against Arizona in 2009. Flashbacks of Rosenkopter in 2008. It just seems like no matter what the year is and, the players changing, the Texans still find a way to rip defeat from the jaws of victory. And it seems like it boils down to, good teams make the plays to win the games. And good teams would be 5-1 or maybe even 6-0 with what the Texans have done so far. So tell me why I should be optimistic and get off that ledge.
Well, the first thing I would say is that I hardly think this was a case of ripping defeat from the jaws.
No, not this particular game, but that would be more so with the Saints and the Raiders games.
But going back to the examples that you brought up last year, I mean, the Jets game, that game was won. All the Texans had to do was make one defensive stand, and they were well capable of doing it, and they just totally goofed on it. The Chargers game, I think very much the same.
Yeah, they gave
kind
up
of thing. This game
big bombs
was
to
never,
six-string receivers.
Yeah, this game was never controlled by the Texans, ever, at any point.
They did have a lead in the third quarter.
For 3 minutes. I looked it up on the play-by-play.
Yeah, that was part of...
It lasted essentially 3 minutes before...
Off of Kareem Jackson giving up a 50-yard ball.
Yeah,
why is he starting?
Before...
Why is he starting?
Not to get
off track, but...
But that's what I'm saying, though. I mean, I can understand in a game where you essentially had it under control. For example, if the Steelers had come back and beaten the Texans
in that
game a few weeks ago, I would understand it a lot better. But the Texans were 6-point dogs going into this game. No Andre Johnson, no Mario Williams. They never had a lead that lasted. for any length of time. I just fail to see this as being in the same vein of the same old Texans losses that we've seen in the past, where they've had leads late in the game and given them up on fluky weird plays like Glover Quinn deflecting a ball to a receiver on an end zone pass or something like
that. Flashback.
I don't want to take you back to the NOM,
Charlie,
there, pal.
Charlie.
I'm just saying that, you know, to me, I don't see it as that same kind of loss. And there wasn't that play.
That,
you know,
one,
I mean?
Yeah, there wasn't,
there wasn't
a one signature play.
There wasn't that interception or that fumble. Matt Schaub didn't throw a single pick in that game yesterday.
They won the turnover battle.
Well, exactly. There wasn't that play where you can point to it and be like, oh, that's it. That was our undoing.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, yesterday was not a should have won. It was a could have won. But it's still a smaller piece of a bigger problem with them not seizing the opportunity to win important games that they have a chance of winning. And I mean, this has been a problem for a decade. Now, you throw out the first couple years because they're an expansion team, but certainly since Schaub has been here, if we went year by year, how many big time wins that they really had to have could we count up? Maybe the Patriots win that got them to 9-7 and almost had them in the playoffs. But other than that, it just seems like year after year, these big moments when they can really take that next step, they just come up short.
Absolutely. No, there's no argument about that. Historically, this team has shrunk in the moment. They have had shrinkage in big stage moments.
Are you going Seinfeld here? At least, you know, we're getting off of NOM. We're going to Seinfeld.
I know. I'm trying to bring us to the pool now instead of NOM. But, you know, there's no question about that. But again, this was not a game that anybody thought they were going to win. I mean, you know, going into it, 6-point dogs, all the national people. I mean, and a lot of it had to do with Andre Johnson. And you watch the way that game unfolded. And they still got 90 yards on the ground between Ben Tate and Arian Foster with Andre Johnson out of the game. If Andre Johnson had been in that game, it would have made a huge difference in their run game. And I think it would have, in a game that was being decided largely by field goals.
Yes.
You know, if you can.
Now, why can't the Texans win games on field goals?
Because they elect to go for it on fourth and one, unfortunately.
We could go into the what ifs and the. The different issues. I mean, you mentioned there Kubiak passing on a field goal. There was a couple of awful blown calls by the officials. The non-intentional grounding by Flacco and the missed face mask penalty. But they lost the game. You mentioned the running game and Andre Johnson. Here's a stat that I wanted to share with you, and I guess would further point to the optimism I should have going forward. In the four games with Andre on the field, the Texans have averaged 148.5 rushing yards per game.
Mm.
In the two games without Andre, they've averaged 81.5.
Wow.
67 yards difference with Andre to without Andre.
No question. I mean,
it's huge. I mean, they put 9 in the box. I mean, Jacoby obviously had the one nice play when he beat Ed Reed on the play action, but I mean, for the most part, they're putting 8-9 in the box with no fear every play.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if there's a player in the NFL.
Non-quarterback.
Yeah, exactly. Good. A non-quarterback player in the NFL who adjusts and affects a defensive coordinator's game planning any more than Andre Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, it's just night and day difference.
And we've been seeing that for the past couple of weeks. That being said, though, and I know I'm giving kind of the sunny side up, you know, version
you
of events here this morning. But I will say this on a serious note. This game against Tennessee this weekend is a must win for this team. And if Andre Johnson is even 75, maybe if he's even 50% of what he is, I think you have to go out there. I mean, I don't care if you have to give him a peg leg and crutches. I mean, you go out, you play him. I mean, you have to have this game. I can't put it in any more serious terms than this. You have to have this game.
Yeah, we talked about the Raiders being a must win, but
that was a soft must win.
Right, that was
it would be really, really good for us right now.
This absolutely
take some pressure off if we won. This is like legitimately in your face, federal prison, lockdown.
Yeah, we won't quote the Office Space line.
No, I'm not going. I'm not going back to the NOM or anything here like you. But I'm just saying this is the real. This is a must win in every definition of the word.
Yeah, well, let's look at that Tennessee game. Obviously, we're talking here on a Monday because someone's got a little bit of vacation time coming up.
Well deserved, I might.
Yeah, that can be questioned. But going ahead, Matt Hasselbeck outside the Steelers game, his last game in the Jacksonville game to start off the season, has played pretty well. I mean, obviously, he won't have Kenny Britt for the running game. Chris Johnson obviously has struggled outside of, I believe, one game against. I don't remember who was against, but he did have 100-yard game.
Yeah.
How do you see a Mario Williams-less Texans defense faring against the Titans offense? I mean, they did pretty well against the Ravens until late in the fourth.
But they had Kenny Britt.
Yeah.
They had Kenny Britt in that game, and that's before Kenny Britt went down. I mean, look, if Andre Johnson radically changes things for defensive planners against the Texans, well, then not having Kenny Britt radically changes things for defensive planners against the Titans, too.
Definitely.
Especially when you consider the struggles, trials, and travails Chris Johnson has had running the football this year. It's not like they do anything well.
They do
a lot of little things decently because they're an average football team in every sense of the word. But when they don't have Kenny Britt, and granted, the tight end they have is Jared Cook,
yeah.
He's good. But besides that, they have nobody who scares me in the passing game. And I think it's going to be almost a Jim Haslett type zero blitz situation that we're going to see out there. I mean, I think they're really going to come after the Titans big time, try to force Hasselbeck into mistakes, which we've seen him do before under pressure.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I mean, every blitz is a run blitz, so you're going to be playing that with Chris Johnson as well. But I think that you just have to be super aggressive and get after the quarterback the same way the Texans were at the Ravens in that first quarter.
All right, then. So with that being said about the Titans offense, do you think the way they play this is much like the way the Ravens and Titans play the Texans? Basically just load up the box, stop Chris Johnson, and dare Hasselbeck to find someone down the field?
I think it's absolutely how you have to play it.
And I assume he'll be looking for that person that's covered by Kareem Jackson, by the way.
Well, you know, unfortunately, Jonathan Joseph also got burned a little bit.
Can we clone Jonathan Joseph?
That's an interesting question.
He obviously got burned on the Anquan Boldin, a 55 or 56 yard play, but he was right there. Mistimed his jump. He was right there.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he lost track of the ball. I don't think he realized it was even coming to him. But whatever.
Well, he jumped up. He just
too little, too late though.
He's not. He's not a basketball player. It wasn't a very effective jump.
No. I mean, needless to say, Anquan Boldin owned Jonathan Joseph yesterday, pretty much. I mean, that wasn't a good performance. That was his first bad game as a Texan.
Okay,
we'll say it. I think that's fair.
I'm still much more comfortable though with.
Well, there's no yeah. nobody's asked. Well, that wasn't the question. I mean, I obviously would take my plumber over Kareem Jackson at this point. At least I know my plumber will trip somebody or like throw a wrench at somebody or something. You know, Kareem Jackson is just it's a guaranteed burn. You know you're gonna get it. You know you can have it anytime.
Yeah,
you
when
want
Torrey
it.
Smith caught that ball, I looked at my buddy. He's like, I have to assume Kareem Jackson's there, and of course he rolls over and see the 25.
And that shows you all you need to know. But that being said, though.
Yeah, we're getting a bit off track here, but.
Even though they got burned ferociously for multiple 50-yard passes yesterday, they knuckled down in the red zone.
Yeah.
And they kept the Ravens from scoring touchdowns and thereby kept the Texans in the game. So I would say this, if I'm Gary Kubiak, or if I'm more appropriately, if I'm Wade Phillips, you know, I'm going to blitz my guys because I know when push comes to shove that my red zone defense, which is among the best in the league, can hold people to field goals.
I mean, we talked about them being all over Roethlisberger, and most of that, not all of it, but a lot of that was attributed to the Steelers offensive line playing just poorly and being injured. But they were more so in the first half, but they were all over Flacco.
Oh, yeah, they were.
And I have no doubt that they could do that again to Matt Hasselbeck.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that slowed down the pursuit of Flacco was putting Dennis Pitta over there as an extra tight end, you know, and just slowing down that incredible pass rush. But, I mean, that's it. Other than that, I don't know if Flacco even makes it out of that game. I mean, it was pretty ferocious there.
Yeah, I think he came up limping once, but he certainly turned it on in the second half. All right, then. So we both think the Texans defense will be able to handle the Titans offense, especially if Antonio Smith avoids any more personal foul calls.
You got to love the passion and everything.
I was about to break a remote. I mean,
you get four stops inside the 3-yard line.
And yeah, and he gives them all
two personal. Two personal, you know, fouls. I mean, you're giving them life. And honestly, if you hold the Ravens to a field goal there, I mean, you know, obviously they lost by 15, so you can't say it changed the game. But I mean, you can't say it would have won the game, but it might have changed the game. If the Ravens,
it might change the game play, the game calling.
Yeah, exactly right. So I mean, maybe Kubiak feels a little bit more comfortable kicking that 37-yarder instead of going for it on 4th-and-1 if the Texans hold the, you know, if the Texans hold the Ravens.
Right, because that would have been to tie the game. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, you have that going for you too.
All right. So we both think the Texans defense should be able to maybe not shut out the Titans, but I think a reasonable expectation is holding them under 17.
I think 17 or
right.
under is
with,
totally
assuming
reasonable.
Andre's back again. This we're recording this on Monday, but I think we're both assuming Andre's back. Texans should be able to move the ball against the Titans a little bit. You have a game prediction?
Oh, I'll say Texans 27 and Titans 17. And let's look at it from Andre Johnson's perspective here for a second.
Okay.
He's in what, his 8th year in the league?
8th or 9th, yeah.
8th or 9th year in
I
the
think
league.
Ninth.
Has yet to make the playoffs. He knows how important this game is. I don't think wild horses could drag Andre Johnson away from this game.
I'm going Rolling Stones. I think
he is going to fade to black. No.
All right. See, can I get some Neil Diamond in here?
I think he's going to be mommy's little helper. I think he's going to go in there and absolutely blow up because this is it.
Plus, Courtland Finnegan.
But also think about this. If they lose this game and they don't end up going to the playoffs, which will probably happen if they lose this game,
yeah.
Think about this. You're going through a regime overhaul next year.
Most likely. In your
10th year in the league, you're now staring down the barrel.
No veteran wants to go through that.
Yeah, you're staring down the barrel of never making the playoffs in your career.
Yeah.
I mean, do you really think about that for a second?
So you're saying this game was important.
I'm saying I don't think there's a chance that Andre Johnson misses this game.
All right. Well, so you said you had it 27-17. I think I'm going to go 24-13 Texans. Either way, a double-digit win, and that would get them to 4-3 with the Jaguars coming to town, followed by home for Cleveland and at Tampa. Now, Tampa gets you to the bye. What do you think? Going into the bye, what do you think? A mandatory 3-1 the next four games to get
mandatory
them to,
because I mean
I guess that'd be 6-4 going into
going 6-4 going into the break is necessary if your goal is 10-6 or above.
Yeah.
10-6 or above, which absolutely should be their goal, then 6-4 going into the bye.
All right, now to college football. Another loss for the Longhorns, but we texted back and forth on Saturday, and I think we were both, despite the loss, encouraged that a young team, which we've said before, is starting and playing almost entirely freshmen and sophomores, was able to bet. We were encouraged that they were able to bounce back from that ass kicking they took from Oklahoma and compete in a game that they were in to the very end.
Absolutely. I mean, Oklahoma State, 7th-ranked team in the country, I believe.
I think they were six
going in.
Still top 10, yeah.
I mean, that's a team well into the top 10. A team that doesn't have a great defense, but they still have, elite Division I athletes. So, I mean, it is an accomplishment for a team that's headed up by freshmen and sophomores on the offensive side to go out there and be able to do something. And that's pretty much what they did. Something.
I mean, they
went out there. David Ash had, I think, had 132 yards.
Something
and
like that. I think the
catches.
Story was, and we could talk about David Ash here in a minute, but Malcolm Brown, for a Texas team that has struggled to find a replacement ever since Jamaal Charles left early, Malcolm Brown looks like he could be, 1,200-1,300 yard rusher for the next 3-4 years.
There's no doubt about it. I think the guy is great. I think he's got that blend of speed and power that makes him you know, not only incredibly hard to hit, but then not easy to take down once you do hit him because he's so powerful. And he's got vision. That's the thing about it. He's got vision. He's got feel. He knows where he's going with the ball. There's every reason in the world to be optimistic about Malcolm Brown.
Now, going back to David Ash, I know we talked about this before the game. It seems like the Longhorns have made their choice. I thought this is a little bit earlier than I thought they would. I thought they'd play this thing out a little bit longer. But they seem to be going with David Ash. Do you think that's the right move?
Absolutely. I mean, Case McCoy's stock plummeted for me after the OU game. I really felt like he showed just a lack of awareness. That may be the best way to put it, just a total lack of awareness of what was going on around him, where he needed to go with the ball. I thought he panicked a little bit. I think you look at David Ash, prototypical size, the ability, huge arm, laser rocket arm, the ability to make plays with his feet, extend plays when necessary, take off and run with it, and even knock a few people over on his way down the field.
Right.
You factor all that in. I think David Ash gives you a better chance to win, and also I just think he played better than Case McCoy. I even on his incompletions. You could see, man, that guy has a cannon of an arm. And I think that's what Mac Brown was thinking about, too, was that, hey, you know, this is one day going to be an elite passer. If we can just get him some reps, get him some games under his belt, and get him some good receivers, as I'm sure they'll take care of over the years, and get him some people to throw to.
Yeah, he definitely seems to – I mean, we talked about the younger brother, obviously, of Colt. Shipley seemed to disappear a little bit in this last game. Seems like Ash – I don't know if it was just the routes that they're running and Mike Davis was the number one guy in those routes, but he certainly seemed to find a chemistry with Mike Davis, 10 catches against Oklahoma State.
Well, it also did look like Oklahoma State's defense was paying a little bit more attention to Jackson Shipley.
I mean, he was their leading receiver coming in.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, he had been the headliner coming in, and there's not a lot of great receivers on that team, but if you had to focus on anybody, I mean, he was kind of the guy. So I think a little bit of that was just that Mike Davis was the guy who was open.
All right, also another game here in the state of Texas of importance, the Aggies versus Baylor. That game was close much the way with the two teams trading touchdowns. That until, I don't remember if it was late third or early first, but the Aggies just exploded, put up a lot of points, and ended up winning that game by, I think, about 20 or so.
27,
right. So now, I mean, do you think the Aggies have recovered? Are they in a position to possibly run off the rest of the schedule, minus maybe Oklahoma?
Yeah. I mean, I was a buyer on the
that
Aggies.
That doesn't sound
early.
Very confident.
Well, I kept waiting for them to choke it up, and you know they didn't though. You got to give them credit for finishing two games in a row now. Managed to finish off Tech barely, and then they come out and pretty much blow out Baylor. So, I mean, granted, those are not, you know, defensive juggernauts by any stretch of the imagination.
Definitely not.
But, I mean, I'll give them a little bit of credit for that, but those are bad defenses. So, I mean, as far as
now, attacking those bad defenses were two pretty good quarterbacks, Ryan Tannehill and Robert Griffin III. We've talked a lot, you know, privately about Robert Griffin and what we think he could do at the next level. But you think both of those guys could be pretty good pro quarterbacks?
Yeah. No, I'm a Tannehill guy. I think he's a mid to late second round kind of guy. I love his athleticism, his speed, and I think he's prototypical in that sense. He throws a really nice ball, too.
Yeah.
You know, I think Ryan Tannehill can do some things. Granted, I think both of them need a year on the bench to kind of grow and acclimate to the NFL.
These aren't day one starters.
No, Robert Griffin, who I am extremely high on, Robert Griffin. I think he's a mid first rounder. But I would definitely, even in his case, give him a year to acclimate and adjust to the NFL. I think he is tremendous. I see good things for both of them, honestly. And in that game, you know, it was just a case where, you know, Robert Griffin was up against a significantly better defense than
the
Ryan
one he
Tannehill
had on
was.
His, yeah, wearing the same uniform.
Yeah.
All right, now, this last Sunday, after all the college games had finished, the BCS released their first poll. I mean, while we can react to some of it right now, I mean, not very often outside of maybe the USC-Texas year, does the 1-2 in the first BCS poll make it to the title game? But here's what I've got. Tell me if you disagree with this. starting off 1-10, or maybe let's go 10-1 actually. 10, I've got Oregon. Now they could slip, obviously, if they start losing more players.
Yeah.
Arkansas, I like their schedule coming up is not too difficult. They've got South Carolina at home. That's probably their toughest game remaining before they would face LSU at the end of the year.
How tough is South Carolina?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Arkansas could easily be 10-1 going to that LSU game. Clemson, I dropped down a little bit to 8. I had them up higher a little bit earlier, but giving up 45 points to Maryland scares me a little bit.
Not a good look.
Yeah, 7, I got Stanford. They've got a couple of nice games coming up against Washington and USC, so I think we'll finally get to see if this Stanford team...
I
want to
see them tested a little bit.
Yeah, we'll finally get to see if they are as good as their results have looked so far. 6, I've got Boise State. I know you're a seller on Boise. They'll probably be 8-0 going into TCU. They need TCU to win a few more games so that improves their strength schedule.
Yeah, no, I think so. I'm not a hater on Boise.
A little bit.
A little bit, okay.
A little bit.
But they're not factoring in the national title picture this year, so my hatred is dumbed down significantly.
All right, now going on to number 5, I've got Oklahoma State. That is behind, and I know this, at least with the actual BCS standings, is in reverse order, but I have Wisconsin 4. Any problem there?
Wisconsin,
they've just looked so good.
They are incredibly dominant, and there's
they're
nobody
run away
remaining
with that
on
conference.
Their schedule who's
going to
beat them.
No, so they're going 12-0.
I would have to concur.
All right, so and that leads us to number 3. I've got Oklahoma.
Yes.
Followed by the obvious 1-2, Alabama 2nd, LSU 1. Now, would you flip-flop that? Would you have Alabama 1?
No, LSU, and we talked about this at the beginning of the season. I told you, and you were kind of a doubter at the time, that LSU could go undefeated.
Yeah, you're right.
I really felt that from the beginning, that LSU was the team to beat. The only thing that scared me was the Jordan Jefferson arrest thing and then Jared Lee and whether or not he was going to be any good, but he answered the
bell. He's avoided the pick 6.
I know. He answered the bell, and now he's, getting all the reps over there.
I think Jefferson got they seem to be splitting snaps, at least in that this Tennessee game the last Saturday.
They were able to overcome it. And I think LSU is the best team in the country. By far. I think they'll actually handle Alabama a little bit, and I think they're significantly better than OU.
So November 5th, LSU, Alabama. Wife takes the kids, lock the door, turn off the cell phone. That game's going to be one not to be missed, huh?
Absolutely right.
Thanks for joining us, sir. Have fun on your vacation. We'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely, anytime.